we come to Germany and there's all this expectation that after so many near misses that this is going to be the time. And they've done so well throughout all their time here in Germany. And you just think it's finally going to be the day, but it just doesn't happen. And they're second place again. And now all we're filled with is disappointment and thoughts about what could have been. But at least Alex Marquez finished on the podium.
Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Oh, dear. That was a good one. Now, I'm guaranteed to be slightly less disappointing than England's European Championship effort. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighbourhood host, Dre Harrison, and this is episode 532. Sorry you've had to wait a little bit for this one. We thought we'd space ourselves out a little bit, especially given MotoGP is currently in the middle of its summer break, which is kind of weird given we've had 2 3-week breaks in the space of the last month or so. But here we are, the last round before the summer break. We're almost halfway into the season now, a season that was originally at 22 races, but now we're only at 20. More on that later. But this is going to be our review of the German Grand Prix. And we watched in horror as Jorge Martin was about to wrap up the near-perfect weekend, and with 2 laps to go, the front said no. To break down all of it, make some sense of it, and talk about some of the news as well, we got, first of all, Mr. RJ O'Connor. How's it going, buddy?
I thought we were all crushingly disappointed that Mark Marquez finished. Only finished second, you know? Starting to think that he just doesn't have it anymore. But I will say, with him and Mark Marquez and Alex Marquez history, something we haven't seen in a while. Something that we haven't seen since the days of Name That Aoki.
More on that in a little bit, but quite right from RJ O'Connor and joining him as ever, because it's the first time we've had 3 of us on for a little while, actually. Mr. Cam Buckley, hello, sir.
The reports of my demise were only slightly exaggerated, but I am back.
Slightly.
I have returned. For those who don't know, I have a wonderful American Staffordshire Terrier named Nigel. If you are a supporter of the show, you've probably seen him. Mm. Well, I love him. He's the best. Not always the smartest of dogs. And he ate something in the yard, which got him mad sick. So that's where I was last week. But he's doing better now. And, you know, it feels only right that I've returned on an episode where we have to discuss the Bozo Gene once again.
The Bozo Gene. What is the Bozo Gene?
Well, it's this incredible crop of riders that we have now who are fast as hell, can turn these bikes from underneath, can leverage all these aerodynamics, all these barely fit for purpose tires, and then they throw it up the road. Just when you think it's all under control.
It's the weirdest thing in the world knowing that MotoGP has 2 of the fastest riders we have ever seen grace this sport in terms of raw speed and ability, and yet both of them are capable of the Bozo Gene hitting them at any given moment. It's always, I'd argue, the top 3 of you when you throw Mark Marquez in there, because he's more than capable of doing the same himself on occasion. Welcome to another edition of the Bozo Gene, and this time it was Jorge Martin's turn to suffer the consequences kiss his Championship League goodbye, because it's now gone for the first time this season. Well, first time since the opening round this season. Jorge Martin is no longer your Championship leader. Francesco Bagnaia is. He's now up by 10 going into the summer break, and we'll discuss how we got to that point and the race itself in Germany very, very soon. A little bit of history, as RJ alluded to as well, with both Marquez brothers on the podium as well. First time in a while that has happened. We'll also talk a little bit of city season, because we are very under the radar. City season story dropped during the race weekend itself, but it involves the man we call Digia, Fabio Di Giantonio, we all thought he was going to Pramac. Turns out not anymore. Or a little bit on that as well. We'll talk a little bit about the track house situation as well, because people cannot stop talking about what's going on at the track house racing team. And now under slightly new partial ownership as well, because I found out the news today that a billionaire's bought out a chunk of track house as well. So they're making all the bread right now at the moment. All the bread, as you do. And we'll talk a little bit about the calendar, because in the last couple of days, it turns out Kazakhstan, not happening at all now. Who could have guessed?
Do I need to get the jar again?
You need to get the jar again, because Kazakhstan is gone for the year, and we'll talk a little bit about the replacement. Turns out we're double dipping in Italy again. More on that very, very shortly as well. But let's do a little bit of housekeeping. Basically, you can find us real quick. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We are on facebook.com/motorsport101. We are also on Twitter at motorsport_101. If you follow our personal handles, you can at DreHarrison101, at RJ O'Connell, and at CBuckley917. I've said that for a little while. If you really like us as well, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our episodes, as well as some of our bonus written content. I normally put those out for $1. So if you're a Patreon backer at any level and you like the race review content that I do, chances are if something big happens and it's not on a Sunday or it's something early, I'll stick it on Patreon now as well. So that's all part of the deal for any Patreon backer, regardless of level. $5 for the audio. Sometimes I put those out for $1 as well if I'm feeling generous. Maybe I'll do it for this one, just because I'm feeling nice. And if you're really lucky, you get back to the $10 level, where you can get into the supporters club of our Discord server, where you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Kira is doing right now. Thanks for joining us. Much appreciated, Kira, in the chat as ever. And of course, you can check out our website for all those details at motorsport101.com. As I mentioned, all reviews of the last week or so has been updated on the website, including my thoughts on a pretty wacky IndyCar weekend in Iowa. We'll be talking about that in our next episode. The corn got very corny indeed. More on that next time out, as RJ takes a big swig of Coke. We need that.
Now, is that Mexican Coca-Cola?
It is.
The next of the gods.
I need to
breakfast
be, I need to be
of champions.
I need to be pouring this over some rum in a glass to prepare for next week's episode. But
Boy.
Without further ado, let's turn it over to our review of the MotoGP German Grand Prix at the Sachsenring. And folks, it was looking like another really good Jorge Martin comeback weekend. He won the sprint race in an intelligent comeback for the front row. He came back from an early attack from Francesco Bagnaia in the Grand Prix, got back in front, and with two laps to go, he was leading by half a second on Bagnaia with the opportunity to stretch out that championship lead that had just shrinking little by little, race after race, as Bagnaia has been on a hot streak. But on the penultimate lap, Jorge Martin consumed some of the Bozo gene and tucked the front entering the first corner and crashed from the lead of the race, gift wrapping Francesco Bagnaia his fourth consecutive win, his fifth in the last six races, and for the first time, taking the championship lead. While us at the Motorsport 101 community were kind of disappointed that England went out, we were also disappointed at another brutal runner-up finish for a team, or at least a rider that we support in Germany. Marc Marquez only finishing second, but having to come back quite a ways to do so. But with Mark in second and Alice in third, the Marquez brothers became the first to share a top-flight podium since the Aoki brothers, specifically Takuma and Nobuatsu, in the 1997 Imola Grand Prix. No guesses as to who won that race. If you know, mid to late 90s, two-stroke 500 cc's, it's Jack Newitt's dad. Anyway, fellas, what on earth was this?
Jorge Martin did everything right until he didn't. And
that's a great review. You could basically end it there.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Well, that's our just, show.
No, he did everything right. He was the fastest man at this track this weekend. He was fantastic in qualifying. He was brilliant in the sprint. He didn't have a particularly good start, but he was the only one making the big moves when he could. Won the sprint. We all know Martin's a brilliant sprinter in terms of the nature of this sport now. He resisted the early pressure. Bagnaia did try to go away early. Didn't work this time. Martin stayed with him, passed him, was in front, pushed the gap out to about 0.8, 0.9. Bagnaia tried one last assault at the end of the race to try and bridge the gap and maybe pass for the win. Call me crazy, Cam. I don't think Martin needed to be at 11 tenths going into those final two laps to win this race. I mean, he could afford to probably give up a tenth or two and still maybe have enough with 0.3 going into the final lap where you're putting it into, well, Bagnaia is going to have to take a moonshot to try and win this race territory. He's won. We forget he won here last year. He's more than capable of beating Bagnaia in a dogfight here. And yet, I don't know what, like, Martin himself couldn't even explain the crash. He was just like, I don't know what happened. Here we are again. But it's all okay. We'll all figure it out. I mean, Cam, I can't be the only one frustrated at this.
I must amend my statement. Jorge Martin, why are you the way that you are? I'm tired of saying this about MotoGP riders because it really is the case. You have to take the good with the bad with Martin, and it doesn't feel like he's learned from last year, because this is now the second time where he's had not a dominant lead, but certainly one where you can afford to take it a little bit easy, and he's chucked the bike at a wall.
He's done the odd bit.
And it's been very late in the races, and it's been two wins. That's 50 points, man.
Chucking the sprint at Mugello where he was running second, that's 59 points he's given up via crashes in the positions he's been in so far this year. And that's the thing that gets me about it, Cam. These were two relatively low-pressure crashes. Like, Jerez, okay, he was in front, but there was half the race still to go. Like, it's not the end of the world if you get past right there and then. You know, it's... We all saw Marc Marquez was able to hang with Bagnaia at the end and potentially make moves. So, again, Martin didn't need to be at full power in order to try and win from the positions he's been in, and yet he's tucked the front and gone down three times this season in critical scenarios. This is not good enough.
And it's the same as last year where, I mean, Bagnaia hasn't been perfect, but he's had a higher floor than I think he has in the past. And he's still making his money on Sunday, whereas Saturday is Martin's territory. If it weren't for the sprints, Martin would be 42 points down.
That goes to show you just how different they are as riders and where their strengths are. Martin is the best sprinter that MotoGP has, and it's not particularly close either. He's won nearly half of them since they came into the sport at the start of last season. It was a 45. Like, it's almost a coin flip with Martin to win a sprint at this point. But 42 back in Grand Prix, you're not winning a championship.
Yeah. That's these two crashes and then some.
I think we were worried at some points last year, like, is Jorge Martin going to just chip away at Bagnaia through nothing but sprints because Bagnaia can't get the job done, relatively speaking, at the sprints compared to Martin? Well,
ultimately, instead of work the other way around.
Yeah.
Where Martin was racking up sprints and good results in races, but Bagnaia would swing back and win on Sunday. And we're seeing the same thing more or less play out this year, where this is a very winnable championship for Pramac and Martin. And both of them have left points on the table, but Martin has left a lot more out there.
Yeah. I mean, once again, this is the third year in a row I'm saying it about Francesco Bagnaia. He has left the door open. He's not been brilliant until these last six races. He had a rough start to this championship. I know he won the Grand Prix in Qatar to start off the year, but after that, it was the chatter that the GP24 was generating. Bagnaia was the one that was the worst affected by it. You know, we saw it in Portimao. We, you know, and the unfortunate Marquez crash he had there. We saw it at Kota where he was getting ragdolled by a couple of people on Quicken Machinery. That was the time. Like, Martin did what he needed to do. He struck while the iron was hot when Bagnaia was struggling. He did everything right. He had, you got to remember, look, let's say he finishes second at Jerez, not even win. Let's say Bagnaia still wins the Spanish Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. Martin's up by 60. Mm-hmm. And we're already having conversations about Bagnaia saying, is he already too far back? Because I've given Martin the benefit of the doubt as a rider that he, in a clutch situation, can still bring the bike home. I can't say that with confidence with Jorge Martin at this point, because this is the second time in a Grand Prix he's crashed from the lead this year. You cannot afford to do that with Bagnaia, because if there's one thing I can say for sure about the Italian, if you make mistakes, he will punish you. There is no question about that now. He is the most, best opportunist rider in the field.
It's the simple nature of a championship where it's basically a two-horse race right now with Mark, you know, chipping away, burning the midnight oil on the 23, but too far back and not on a quick enough bike.
No.
Not yet, at least. See how that goes next year. But right now, if you're not scoring, he is. That's the case for both of these guys. And Martin is just making more mistakes. It's very similar to what we're seeing in F1 right now, where, you know, the Red Bull ain't dominant and Max isn't winning as often, but he's still pulling out points on all of his direct rivals.
Mm-hmm.
So it ends up just not mattering.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the situation right now over there. Like, actually, Mercedes being good again might be the best thing to happen to Red Bull for the rest of this season, because if Russell and Hamilton can start taking some wins away, given how far back Mercedes are, that might actually help Max out. Max is going to get... If there's one thing we saw in 2021 is that Max Verstappen has no problem finishing second. You know,
Depends on the number of that car up ahead.
Depends on the opposition, but you get my point. He's been able to point his way to titles.
And right now, Bagnaia is already in a position where all he really has to do is just keep doing what he's been doing and rack up enough points, and he can expect that Martin will just drop 25 out of nowhere. And we've said that about Bagnaia. Bagnaia is just as capable of doing it. But mm-hmm. on current form, he isn't doing it as much as the other guy, and that's all he needs.
Francesco Bagnaia has the best medication for the Bozo gene, I'd say.
The other guy having a bigger one?
I would say that he is on the best prescription to help temper that Bozo gene out of, like, between the two of them. Somebody needs to go to Jorge Martin's doctor and be like, hey, yo, can we swap prescriptions? Because not all antidepressants are the same. It's like all anti-Bozo gene medications aren't the same. I don't know.
And even, I mean, it doesn't feel like it because of the way Martin has also kept up with him. But we're talking about a Bagnaia that's in the best form of his life. He's won 5 out of the last 6, and really he was only gifted one of them. The other ones, he's got to the front, pretty much stayed there, and dominated the whole way.
Yeah, like, Assen was a butt beating.
Yeah, and Assen was, well, he was essentially perfect. Bagnaia doesn't do that very often. And he's
never led FP1 until that weekend.
Yeah, so the way it's going right now, with that situation developing, with Bagnaia now in the hottest form of his life, winning 5 out of the last 6 and 4 in a row. The last time Bagnaia won 4 straight was 2021, where he was on that Quartararo, was on that Quartararo comeback trail, where he pretty much dominated the rounds after the summer break, all the way to Misano. That was the last time Bagnaia won 4 straight. And it's another one of his more favorable rounds because it's the British Grand Prix, the first round back after the break at Silverstone.
Martin picked the worst possible time to give him an in.
Yeah, especially given that if the form book's anything to go by, Aprilia will probably be quite strong at Silverstone too. Low grip track, risk of rain.
Aero
coming into play. Biggest track on the calendar in terms of surface area. Expect the Aprilias to be strong at Silverstone. So if we can throw Maverick, maybe Aleix Espargaró, hell, maybe Miguel Oliveira potentially on the track house, because Miggy had a fantastic weekend.
Raul Fernandez will have the 24 as well. That's going to be his first race on the current spec Aprilia.
Indeed.
And Miggy, that should help all the Aprilias, because that's another bike to pump data in.
Yeah, Miggy was great here. Was great at Silverstone last year. Was fourth in the race. Came out of nowhere this year on the Aprilia. He's just had his best weekend in the championship. You know, second in the sprint. Trackhouse's first podium finish since joining MotoGP in any capacity, and then sixth in the Grand Prix and best non Ducati runner. Because yes, spoiler alert, they locked out the top five. you know, you're shocked at that state of play. But yeah,
hey, Francesco, Frankie Morbidelli bringing up the back end of that top five. It's got to be encouraging.
A little bit bozo, but a great ride.
A bit aggressive.
From Frankie, yeah.
Yeah, we actually had a legitimate Franco Morbidelli sighting for the first time, God, in like 3 years. Bit testy with a couple people while riding a bike-to-bike. Mark Marquez had his windshield snapped, which is a rare one. But he rode mercilessly back through the field, had the worst qualifying you could possibly imagine, courtesy of Jack Miller and Stefan Bradl. Honda Racing Corporation, why are you the way that you are? And just dragged up a little bit of that old Saxon Ring magic to gain 11 places.
Yeah,
I think this is what should have happened. This should have happened a lot more in 2020. The one year that the Marquez brothers were at Repsol Honda. And yes, I know with the benefit of hindsight, Honda's performance was falling off a cliff. But you got to think that, like, the Marquez brothers would have shared at least a couple of podiums together if Mark was actually, you know, healthy that year.
We forget, despite all the struggles at Repsol, Alex Marquez still had two podium finishes on that Repsol Honda in 2020.
He could have won a couple of races, too.
Very nearly won at Aragon. It was only a on-fire Alex Rins that beat him at Aragon, and that was the closest Alex Marquez has been to a Grand Prix victory. if Mark had a healthy arm, he absolutely, I think, still would have won multiple Grand Prix on that Honda. And I think you're right. I think they would have shared a couple of podiums here and there. And I know a lot of people want to crack jokes. It's weird because the bad faith is starting to come out now with Mark a little bit, where it's like, oh, remember when Enea Bastianini won three Grand Prix in 2022 on with Gresini as a brand new team? To which I say, first of all, it's blatantly obvious to me that the 24 is busted in by comparison to the 23.
Yeah, now that they've cured the chatter issues, that 24 is
flying
real quick. But also there's the fact that in previous years, the customer Ducatis, the year-old Ducatis, were end-of-season spec. And this year, for reasons that we all really know, it's a launch spec bike. It's not the same bike that won the championship. It's more or less the bike that was in Portimao last year, according to those within the team.
Yeah, Alex Marquez said it's the Portimao spec, so basically start of the year. So, yeah, you know, we've seen the story about that before. And quite frankly, on a personal level, when you see the pictures of Mark Marquez celebrating with his brother on the podium for the first time, and you saw how happy they were, who gives a shit? Honestly, like, my brother is my best friend. I love him to death. Like,
you almost disowned each other after that England match. I'm not gonna lie.
He's a Gareth Southgate hater. I was an optimist. We were at each other's necks for most of the day. I'm not gonna lie to you. But don't tell him I said this. But I do love him to pieces. He's my best friend. So if I was ever able to celebrate a podium,
brother Ryan, Drain tells me.
If I want to crash the mood, I'll just clip another Mario Kart video for him.
But yes, like, if I had the ability to be able to celebrate a Grand Prix podium with my brother, I'd be the happiest man in the world. So, you know, you could tell.
Two of them look like it. Two of them look like it up there. He's like, all I want is pictures with Alex. It's great.
Yeah. He said that on Twitter afterwards. He was like, I just want Alex pictures. They do genuinely really do love each other as brothers. And I do love the story of once Morbidelli was cleared out of the way, Alex Marquez was 2 seconds ahead of his brother. Mark takes half a second a lap out of Alex until the end of the race. And Alex, with two laps to go, looks at his own board, sees 0.0 Mark behind him. And he said to himself in his helmet, and I quote, "What the fuck do I do now?"
I don't know, Mark rode around him like the dude was on a 250.
Yeah, that was the chainsaw came out on that one. Mark Marquez was the fastest man on track at the end of that race. The old Saxon Ring magic was still there, but again, probably just gave himself too much work to do in qualifying, where again, 13th to start, and this one wasn't entirely on him. But yeah, if he could get the qualifying ironed out, then look out, because like the pace to be able to win is absolutely still there with Mark. I think it's still a matter of time. Aragon is one I would circle on the calendar.
I think the biggest thing is qualifying, because with this one, I mean, it wasn't exactly easy to pass here. And again, should have been a relatively easy Q2. And instead, I mean, both of his flying laps were trashed.
And that's only off the back of the practice crash, where he broke a finger and bruised his ribs by having a huge high side at the waterfall trying to save it at turn 11, which was not serious behavior. You don't save those.
Look, considering how last year went at the Saxon Ring, what that bike was doing over Wasserfall, I think he'll take it.
Oh, we were watching like old MotoGP clips before we went on air, specifically like those top 15 last lap chaos moments, and we just saw so many old clips and just thinking, man, Repsol Honda used to be so good at this. What happened, man?
Yeah, it came out today on motorsport.com that they're the only team without a counter rotating crankshaft, and I almost threw my laptop.
Now, what are the benefits of a counter rotating crankshaft?
It makes the engine not want to kill you when you get on the power. It makes it a lot easier to ride. Something that the Honda isn't.
Is that ideal?
Yeah. It's almost like teams were going to this in the mid-2010s. Honda Racing Corporation, why are you the way that you are?
Should we move on before Cam explodes again?
Would the 450 Turbo be easier to ride than a Honda MotoGP bike in 2024?
Having ridden a CX650 Turbo, I would say it's probably equal.
Yeah.
But I'm probably having more fun on the Turbo because it makes funny whoosh noises.
And it's got that 80s aesthetic. We got more silly
stickers. Turbo stickers. We got more. More than that.
We got more silly season news because it looked like Fabio Di Giantonio was all but certainly heading to Pramac with the Yamahas. And then we were swerved because he's decided to stay with VR46 for another year. And most importantly, has been promised a GP25 current spec bike in 2025. And in a twist, Ducati are considering dropping to just 3 factory supported bikes in 2025. So, Dre, is this a good move? A bonus question, what do you think Trackhouse should do with it, right? So I'll let you start with the question about Ducati and VR46.
I'll start with Ducati first on this one. Interesting that Ducati, I get the impression they were waiting for an excuse to downsize, which is weird for a team that's been dominating for the last 3 or 4 years while having 8 bikes on the grid.
Don't you want to have the motorcycle racing equivalent of the Porsche Nobody's Perfect poster?
You'd think. You know,
that's what they've been rocking the last 2 years.
I mean, yeah, they're going to go down to 6 next year, and only 3 are going to be factory spec by the sounds of it. It looks like Ducati wants to save some bread. But if they're going to have, I mean, I didn't even realize this, that Fermin Aldeguer's agent, which I believe is Hector Faubel, the former Grand Prix racer himself, he let out the bag with Speed Week that Fermin Aldeguer is only entitled to current spec machinery in years 3 and 4 of his contract. So he doesn't have to be put on a GP25 straight away. So I think Ducati's used that negotiating power to at least just give it to DG Antonio, who, if you look at the riders they have left, between him and Alex Marquez, are probably the two best non-factory riders they've got right now. So, fuck it.
You'd think.
Why not give it to Fabio? He's earned it. He's been excellent this season. He's been the second best runner on the GP23 this year. He's smoked Marco Bezzecchi this season, a guy that, again, we all thought, well, Bez has been brilliant. Was brilliant last year. It's not happening for Bez this year.
Completely derailed Bez's hype train.
Yeah.
Bezzecchi still got the bag.
He did.
Yeah. But... you know, I mean, Dre, like, this is someone who was basically out of the sport with, like, 5 races to go at the end of last year.
Yeah, this time last year, we thought DG Antonio was finished.
Yeah, you his rookie season could not have gotten worse, and it didn't look like it was getting better in the second half of the year, in the second season, and then, well, the last few races literally sank his skin.
Frankie Karcecki breaks out the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah, he was just like, fuck it, let's do something radical with the setup on this bike, and it clicked, and then DG Antonio was the second best rider in the championship in the final 5 races. It's wild how this...
And that's carried over. He's been really good this year.
He's carried over. He's been VR46's lead rider, and given the remaining... I mean, again, not enough has been said about Ducati pretty much purging half their resources to bring Marc Marquez in. And even Ducati themselves have admitted it split the room in Bologna. A lot of people do not like this move because they've given up Martin, they've given up Bastianini, they've given up 2 factory bikes with Pramac and a relationship with them. And it looks like they're going to go down to 3 factory bikes next year. But of the guys they've got left, DG Antonio makes the most sense. So why not? Why not Digio instead of why not Bez, I guess, is the new trend. So for me, I think it makes total sense. And I don't think Ducati could afford to lose another quality rider like that. The only thing I'm finding interesting now is, where does Aldeguer end up? Does he end up at Gresini or does he end up at VR46? Because there's now a free seat on both of those teams. So... where is he at Gresini or is he at VR46 next year? He's going to be on a 24. That we now know for certain, unless Ducati gives him a GP25 for 2025 instead and runs 4. But we'll have to wait and see, because Aldeguer blows hot and cold at the best of times. I mean, yeah, won the Moto2 race over here this weekend, dominated as a matter of fact, but... yeah, it was a nice reminder of how good he can be, because the man's been pretty ropey for form in Moto2 in recent weeks. But that's how I look at it.
When he's good, he's really good. When he's bad, it's kind of hard to watch.
It's Bozo Gene levels again. Another one with it. Which means he's going to be right at home at Ducati. Honestly, right in.
One big Bozo family.
Yeah,
that's the thing. This is the one thing that prevents these races from being boring. Boring Ducati washouts front to back is just like every rider has to have a bit of a Bozo gene.
Yeah.
Jump cut to a Ducati on the floor.
Yeah, Fermin Aldeguer is going to go visit his grandma in the new Italian factory team, and he's going to be greeted by a warm hug from his grandma and then a bowl of chicken Alfredo that has the Bozo gene in it.
No.
Well, welcome to Bologna, son.
Did the cook have the Bozo gene? Did the sauce split?
Too much butter.
No. The only time where you can truly say too much butter.
Now, interesting that Trackhouse is also in the news, because today they just got a shit ton of money dumped into them from a company called Avenue Sports Fund, which I just learned minutes ago was the fund founded by one of the guys that used to own the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah.
What, are they going to bring in Darvin Ham now?
Please don't. Have I not suffered enough, Buckley? Don't answer that. Now,
no.
It's interesting because people are debating back and forth about what Trackhouse should do. I had a couple of chats with people in the paddock regarding this German Grand Prix weekend.
What are the options? What could they do here?
Well, the easy option is they stick with their current pair. Raul Fernandez, from what I'm hearing, is pretty safe. He's going to be there next year, almost certainly. It's Miguel Oliveira's seat that's the questionable one, because
it's really crazy to think about a guy that we're thinking of as like a top three, top five rider in the world not very long ago.
No. 5 MotoGP wins, top 10 in the championship last year. You know, not with the best equipment in the world.
When he wins, it's pretty spectacular.
Yeah, when he's been on same spec bikes, he has given some of the best riders in the world an honest run for their money. Francesco Bagnaia in Moto 2, Brad Binder in Moto 2, Jorge Martin in Moto 2. Miguel Oliveira is a quality bike rider. Do not by any means underestimate what he can do in the right circumstances, but there is speculation about his future because he largely hasn't performed to Fernandez's level this season until this weekend. Now, the easy option is they keep him there, but allegedly the rumors I've heard is that they've told Miggy, you're going to be a number two rider if you stick around. They're going to build this ship around Fernandez, for better or worse.
And will he want to take that with the experience and the CV that he has?
Option number two is that they cut him. And, well, if you cut him, everybody knows the obvious target. It's Joe Roberts in Moto 2.
Not Iagura,
amazingly, because it looks like Iagura might be going to Idemitsu.
No.
Idemitsu like an LCR.
My
to replace
boy.
Taka.
Welcome back. Don't forget, you're here forever, if you leave.
The thing about that is that Iagura has said he will only move up if he wins the Moto 2 championship. And he took a good chunk of points out of Sergio Garcia this weekend because he finished second in that. I think he's 7 points behind Garcia now. He's second overall as MSI Helmets is dominating in Moto 2 right now. So the options are, I personally think they should go after Sergio Garcia, who apparently is also on Pramac's radar. Depending on who they can and can't get, especially now that they were gunning for, they made it very clear they wanted DJ Antonio, and now they can't get him. So they might. Oliveira for me is probably the best rider on the board now left as a free agent at the end of the season potentially, because it's looking like Mir is going to stay at Honda for 2 more years. God knows why.
If he wants to keep going,
I think they should go after Sergio Garcia, but Joe Roberts, who, in Roberts' defense, had a really gritty ride in Germany to finish 8th in the Moto 2 race with a collarbone that he broke only 7 days earlier.
That's good. And it keeps him 3rd in the championship. Let's not forget, he's still about a race away from Garcia.
Most importantly, best Calex, because we all know that the Boscanoro chassis right now is the best in the field. They've won 10 out of the last 11 Grand Prix dating back to last year.
I've been saying that middle of last year.
Yeah, they finally made it click. They're getting more customers and they're winning week in, week out. They cannot be beaten. Calex has slipped. I wonder how much of that's got to do with them supplying Honda or helping them out with their development, because their Moto2 chassis...
The bozo flows both ways.
Maybe so, but if you wanted an argument to bring in Joe Roberts, you will never have a stronger case than now. And from a commercial standpoint, yes, of course, there is value. We're talking about Liberty. We're talking about new ownership coming in. We all know Liberty has tried very hard to push for an American breakthrough. And as my man Matt Dunn, who's a good friend of mine, pointed out on Twitter, there is no other American in the pipeline. Not at this level. After Cam Beaubier went back to Moto America, after Sean Dillon Kenny was booted out of the OnlyFans American racing team, there is no American prospect on the ladder. Like, so I would say best chance 5 to 7 years before we're talking about another American that could make it to that level.
Cam, so, we were just watching Nikki Hayden, Colin Edwards battle for the win of the last lap at Austin. We're just thinking, man, this shit used to mean something less.
Yeah.
I used to get up early in the morning to watch it.
So, still do.
But I had national.
It just ain't the same that we're thinking of.
I had national pride then.
The United States of America, a nation that has produced multiple Premier Class champions, and now we're thinking of just like this scrappy, rebuilding upstart nation of motorcycles. Man.
What am I going to do? Have national pride now?
And that's just it. The point I'm getting at here is, if you want to bring in an American, it's now or never. Because Joe Roberts is 26. This is his 7th Moto2 season. He would never be in the frame for a MotoGP seat under normal circumstances. The synergy pick is to get Joe Roberts in. So, but apparently from what I've been told, Justin Marks is making it. He's been very hands-off on this. He's saying it's Davide Brivio's call. So...
Yeah.
Cam, if you're Davide Brivio, are you tempted to play the national card here?
Well, probably not, because it's not a question of money. Trackhouse is loaded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they just got more of it today.
Exactly. So they're probably... You pick the best rider available.
Even if you ignore the extra commercial value that Roberts would probably bring you? Because we all know Dorna will push for it too.
If Dorna wants to give you a kickback, then sure. But
because they would love to have an American in the top flight again.
They would, given that there is just, I mean, between the lack of a TV deal and the lack of prospects.
We got MotoGP on True TV now. It's not just the home of first round March Madness games.
I mean, I've been watching it on Max and the coverage has been excellent, other than the fact that my TV acts a little weird with it.
Yeah, but it's TNT's coverage. Exactly. And to be fair, it is good. It's very biased, but it's good.
Really? What makes you say that?
I don't know. Susie Perry, Michael Lafferty, who owns a team, and Sylvain, I'm basically British Gintoli.
Well, it's a good thing they have no British riders to root for in the top class.
Ooh! You struck me in my Jake Dixon supporting heart. Oh,
that heart's still beating.
Al Crutchlow got scratched from his wild card round because he had a very yucky. I feel like this is the second very yucky looking Cal Crutchlow injury that I can recall from memory.
Oh yeah, there's been a few. Cal doesn't do small ones. Cal does big ones.
No, like when he crashes, like it makes the highlight reel.
Yeah, way I see it, I'm kind of with Cam. I would go for Sergio Garcia in this instance if I wanted to get a rider that I could potentially bring in. Hell, I'd be tempted to go Alonso Lopez, another guy with the Bozo gene, but very high upside rider potentially. But
a double skip, I don't know.
I mean, if you're going to go Garcia, why not just keep Oliveira? Again, I don't...
It's very weird that Oliveira... Like, that's the problem, I guess, with Oliveira. He's so hot and cold. Mm. When he's hot, he is legitimately a top-tier rider. When he is cold, he is very much an also-ran.
Which puts him, on average, pretty middle-class rider.
And it's frustrating to watch, because we know what he's capable of.
Is that going to be enough for Trackhouse in the next 2 or 3 years?
It depends on what Aprilia wants Trackhouse to be.
Jason's put an interesting option in the chat. As I said, if you want to pick someone, you double skip and bring David Alonso in.
Might be a bridge too far.
I'd be tempted. The thing is that Trackhouse can afford to wait around with Alonso as a prospect and see what comes. The problem is, there'll be factory teams that'll be calling for David Alonso, because if you haven't been watching Moto3 this year, David Alonso is special. Like, he is...
I felt like we just said you'll never see another Ryan of, like, Pedro Acosta when he was in Moto 3. And then, and then lots of...
Yeah, it pops up, right? There is another. Yeah, I mean, at this point, I mean, if you're Yamaha, that Pramac team, you should be thinking about Alonso now.
Yeah. I mean, if your factories will be eyeing this guy up because he's the number one prospect in Moto 2 and 3 combined right now, he is carving the Moto 3 championship right now. Danny Holgado and Colin Fire are the only two people that are in his league at the moment. Alonso is him, still only 18 years of age, might even be better his age now than Pedro Acosta was when he was in Moto 3, which is terrifying. But the double class jump is risky. It's only been done like twice with Jack Miller and Darren Binder. Darren Binder was never that kind of prospect. Jack Miller was fine, but he took probably 2 or 3 years to really find his footing in the top flight. And some teams
and now it looks like he's going to be gone at the end of this year anyway, completely.
Yeah.
Unless like a miracle happens and he somehow finds a way to squeak his way back out of the 25 grid.
Yeah, so way I see it, I still think Oliveira is the best rider you've got available to you. I don't know why you want to potentially alienate him by making him a number two rider. I don't think Fernandez is massively better than him. So
I don't think Trackhouse is really in a position in the championship to be playing the 1 and 2 game.
Me neither. Like, why? Why are you playing favorites with your riders? I don't get it. Like, I don't get why Fernandez wasn't on the 24 Speccer Pradier in the first place, and I don't get why he's the guy you want to build this entire team around. His upside is there, but it's been so small with Fernandez since his Moto 2 season that I don't know how good he actually is at the highest level. Like, what is his ceiling here? We saw the sprint in Catalunya.
Dre, I'm really curious to see how he gets on the 24 Aprilia, because that bike is, again, clearly a big step in all areas versus the previous bike. And Raul hasn't been terrible on the 23, but he hasn't been great either. I think Silverstone is, like, on the future plans of Trackhouse on how we evaluate Raul. The next, I think, 3 races are going to be really, really interesting.
Yeah, very, very interesting indeed. I'm going to be very curious to see what's going to be on the horizon for Trackhouse going forward. One more point to address before we get out of here as well, because the calendar was changed again. Remember when the season started and we were talking about the possibility of 22 Grand Prix and we immediately all thought, well, Argentina's not happening.
Let's slice this one off.
Yeah, just get rid of this one from now. We'll talk about India later. No, so Kazakhstan, which has been moved to September, as you may or may not know, is not happening at all now. It was originally going to be in June. That had got moved to September due to flooding in the region and due to, allegedly, from behind the scenes, broken promises between Dorna and the promoting team of that race. It has been taken off the calendar altogether, and the rumors are it had Dorna scrambling to find a replacement because, well, there's no getting around it. You promised the TV companies 22 races to start this season, and you're already down 2.
And it's July.
And it's July as well, which isn't ideal either. Apparently, Bruno was in the mix. They need a resurfacing, and who's paying for that at short notice? You know, you can't do that.
Especially given a lot of it was financial reasons as to why Bruno isn't even here.
Exactly. There was talk that Qatar might double up and do a second round in the year, but do you want to do a Qatar night race in September?
Absolutely not.
I'm going through a heat wave right now, and so is Cam. And I know how last year's race went down. Oh, hell no.
And on bikes with no power steering.
Yeah.
No.
Exact same problem you had with India's race last year, where riders were almost passing out due to heat exhaustion. We're not having this again. So Qatar was out. And to be fair, apparently Qatar turned down the opportunity. They're like, nope, we're good. We don't need a second race here. There was talk about Portimao. Yeah, exactly. The big boys are here. There was talk of Portimao potentially, but they couldn't do it. Turns out we're going back to Misano. Misano will now be a double header. A race, then a test in between, and then another race. The second one, which has now been named the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix. Stop if you've heard that one before. And that's the start now of a triple header with the two flyaway, with the flyaway season starting straight afterwards, because the next round's in Mandalika for the Indonesian Grand Prix, and then the Japanese Grand Prix at Motegi the week after that. Gents, what do you make of the news? It's a messy bitch, to say the least.
Yeah. Also, one of these races is going to clash with World Superbike in Italy.
Yeah.
On the world stage, you have not just the two big motorcycle series clashing against one another head to head, but in the same country.
Yeah, the Acerbis Italian round of World Superbikes at the brand new Cremona circuit. That was their big Italian crown jewel round for World Superbikes, and now it's going directly head-to-head with another Italian race at Misano. You're now making the regional fans of Italy choose. That's never a good idea. Like, as a promoter, this is just bad. None of this is good.
Yeah, I mean, break out the jar again. This was a great failure. Spectacular failure by all involved. And, I mean, you could see it coming a mile away, couldn't you?
Yeah, another pound in the jar there from O'Connell. I get it. You're desperate. Desperate companies do desperate things. I'm not exactly, you know, going to shit on Dorna for this. Like I said, India and Argentina was out of their control. Argentina was government interference and the slashing of funds. India, the promoters didn't pay up. That's understandable. And the fact, actually, them being in March 2025 next year, it's just better for all parties anyway. That's a good move all around. This was avoidable. And I Dorna needs to stop targeting these big, overambitious project rounds, because it's not happening. It's not the first time Dorna swung for the fences and missed. Remember the Kaimi ring?
No.
Oh yeah, the kind of finish round.
Do you remember it? I don't.
Because it never happened.
It's another case of they really, really want to be Formula One, who by the sheer power of Formula One can just brute force this shit through and make it happen, and they're just not.
They can't do it. They're not them in that sense. And like I said, they tried the Kaimi ring. They couldn't get it homologated. And then COVID in Ukraine happened. You know, they tried the circuit of Wales. Remember that when we talked about this on the earlier days of M101?
What a funny thing.
That long predates my time here.
Yeah, that was the circuit of Wales. There was this big, super ambitious FIA Grade 1 track that they were going to build in the middle of Wales. It was going to add 5,000 new jobs to the region. It was going to be this great, big, all-in-one track and shopping facility. And this was all going to be a great, big plan to... And that was going to be the British Grand Prix. And then Wales fumbled the contract, didn't quite know what they were doing as a direct result. And it led to the weird situation where the Circuit of Wales granted its hosting rights to Silverstone to host the British Grand Prix. And that's why we don't race at Donington anymore. Weird. I don't get it.
Donington, which we also almost tore up and completely reconfigured for it to be the host of the British Grand Prix, only to see it stay in Silverstone, which was again reconfigured massively to continue hosting the British Grand Prix.
Yeah. This is the point I'm getting at here. Dorna is trying to brute force these championship rounds, and it's not working. And they've tried very hard to stop putting all their eggs in three big baskets: Spain, Italy, and the United States. Because at one point we had four rounds in Spain, we had two in Italy, and we had three in the United States. That wasn't that long ago, where we used to race a Laguna Seca, Indianapolis, and the Circuit of the Americas in one calendar year. You know, like, these guys, used to go for staple banker rounds, and now they're trying to swing for the fences with these great big ambitious tracks and ambitious obscure projects to make it more of a global championship, and it's not working. Like, I don't know. Dorna needs to be thinking, what are my banker rounds for the next 10 years? What are the rounds that are always going to draw a crowd, always going to make money, and you know the fans will keep coming back year on year? What's your Le Mans? What's your Mugellos? Your Catalunyas? Rounds that are always going to have strong turnouts. Not, let's try and build a whole brand new track. I forgot about Banneton Park as well. When just talking about this, when they were trying to get a race in Hungary via the Banneton Park, and that's not materialized either. Like, we've had four overly ambitious, tried and failed projects in the last decade of this sport, and Kazakhstan's another notch on the bedpost. It's just silly, in my opinion. Like,
they're trying these moonshots without the support to really get them done, and it just doesn't reflect well on the series and the organizers when, like, one or two project failures like this you can kind of chalk up to other reasons. When you've had like five, you really have to look inward.
And it's not like the sport isn't popular in certain places. Like we mentioned, Le Mans had 120,000 on race day earlier this year. Germany had a record attendance this very race, 90,000 on race day. You know, Germany loves their bikes now because it's got more of a festival vibe than most Grand Prix. So they play a whole bunch of live music, people camp out, and they make a weekend out of it. You know, that's a big thing for these dudes. Like, Mugello is not the powerhouse it used to be, but this year was its best turnout in a good few years, and there was a big wave of Bagnaia fans, and that was actually good.
Italian winner, dominant Italian champion winning the race on an Italian bike helps with that.
Oh, massively. That's the first time I've seen a big Bagnaia turnout anywhere in MotoGP. These are the rounds you need to be focusing on. These are the rounds that will ultimately make you money in the long run, not these highly experimental, high-risk races in countries that are unproven to sustain a biking crowd. Like, was anybody here for Kazakhstan? Did anybody think, you know which country needs a Grand Prix? Kazakhstan. No!
All of you, you put your hand down in the crowd.
Sacha Baron Cohen could be putting his arm up right now and I call him a liar. Fuck that guy. But
in
still.
In character.
In character.
Oh my God. Still
fuck that guy.
Oh, he'd hate anyway, me.
But you get my point here is that I don't see what Dorna's vision is for this championship. I get that it wants to be more of a global series, but.
Makes sense because.
Huge biking crowd in India.
Huge, yeah. Huge biking crowd. And it was a messy launch, but they got it done somehow, and they're going to try and stick with it. And if it does succeed long term, fantastic.
And I think it will, because a March slot with better weather and potentially cheaper with more crowds, I think India will do well long term. Yeah. I think it's a much better spot for it than September. But I completely agree with your sentiment, RJ. You need more staple rounds. This is not the time to be experimenting right now. And they'll be fine if they just stick with the ones that brung you here. Like, you don't need to be going to Kazakhstan, to Wales, to Hungary. And
well, you're going back to the growth for growth's sake.
Yeah.
Rather than making it sustainable growth.
Yeah. Like, and I get it. You want to be F1 because F1's got 24 rounds now. MotoGP tried to have 22. You know, like the plan was 22 this year. And we've drawn issue with that in of itself. But I'm not sure this is the way you want to get to 22 races. Let's put it to you that way. If you're going to start expanding the calendar again, go to tracks that you know you'll draw a crowd. You know, ask Indianapolis if they want to go back. You know, why not? You know, at this point, rather that than Kazakhstan, this doesn't make any sense to me. That feels like the definition of mates rates. And well, it is bike racing after all. Mates rates are a lot more common. Anyway, we'll get out of here. This is going to be the last MotoGP episode for about three more weeks because, sadly, MotoGP is in the middle of its summer break. Right now, it is back on August the 4th for the British Grand Prix at Silverstone, one of the big ones. Should be a fantastic
new ones. We got the one this weekend. It's not MotoGP, but the all-star game of motorcycle endurance racing is back. This is
yes.
Johann Zarco's in it. Gino Rey is back in it.
Yay.
Suzuki's brought a carbon neutral bike. And yeah.
If Honda is going to take refuge in one last bastion of bike racing to not suck, this is it.
If they fall here, we need to have a serious intervention. Not like we already didn't need to have a serious intervention earlier, but yes.
Well, if they lost Jet Lawrence for the season over here in Pro Motocross.
Okay, but that wasn't the fault of the bike being shit. That's just a UCL.
No, they're not. Yeah, but they can't have anything nice. They've crippled my Jet Lawrence Rider of the Year campaign because it was going hot until it wasn't.
Such a shame. But yes, the Suzuki 8 Hours, I was going to mention that in my outro, but yeah, nice one, RJ. I appreciate that. Yeah, Suzuki 8 Hours this weekend as well. Who knows? You might even do a little mini pod on that somewhere. Keep an eye out for it, depending on
how... Break out the glow sticks.
The glow sticks will be glorious, and do check that out. I believe it will be on British Eurosport here in the UK. So do check it out if you haven't already. Well worth the hours. It's a beautiful spectacle, a fantastic, for me, the best biking endurance race in the world, one of the best endurance races in the world, period. It's a wonderful time. Do give it your 8 hours. It's well worth it. And again, a huge slab of some of the best riders in the world from World Superbikes, from Moto America, from MotoGP, including, as mentioned, Johann Zarco will be down there as well. Yeah, and from Japanese superbike racing as well. So do check it out. It is going to be a fantastic all-star race for bikes. It's going to be a great time. Do check it out. For us, our next episode will be the Iowa doubleheader, the Hy-Vee 250s, as we like to call them over here, where, well, it was a hot mess. And that was just the corn. But until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell and Cam Buckley. Until next time, thank you very much for listening. And we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
But enough about bikes. We're getting Miatas of Martinsville.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah, let's go!